So at our last talk, we talked about the Enmei Jikku Kanongyo, the chant about compassion, the heart of compassion. And we looked at the story of Avalokiteshvara, and that it acts as a sort of metaphor for our own heart of compassion, how we approach suffering. Or can aspire to anyway. And the story was that Avalokiteshvara had made this great vow to do away with the suffering of the world, to work and work and not stop until all the suffering was relieved, gone. And that this didn't work out quite as planned. It was a bit overwhelming, and so much so that Avalokiteshvara's head exploded. A metaphor for how it is for us when we are faced with great suffering. I mean, the desire naturally arises. We don't want everybody to suffer. I mean, we are in this great burning world where suffering is everywhere. Surely there's something we can do about it. And in small ways, we can relieve it. But to recognize that it's everywhere, that it's beginningless and endless. This makes us feel as though the heart is just going to explode with the effort, too much, blown apart. And then the story goes on that Avalokiteshvara is put back together again by the Buddha, or a Buddha, I'm not sure which one. The Buddha comes and puts her back together again with many faces and many arms. And on each hand, an eye to see the hand to respond. And this is a rather different response to suffering than trying to end it, trying to make everything go better. It's Avalokiteshvara then became the one who beholds the cries of the world, not necessarily changing anything like specifically, but enough just sometimes, anyway, enough just to be there and witness this suffering, the cries of the world. Of course, there are all those hands with the eyes so that action can be done, things can be, help can be offered. But with the clear understanding that that suffering is part of this world. It's one of the noble truths. It's not going away. And yet we do something. So as I was thinking about this talk, I was reminded of a video that's been popping up around the internet lately. Of a man and a woman sitting together having a talk. The woman's very upset. She's talking about with her husband about this great pain that she's feeling, and it's unremitting. She doesn't know what to do about it, and as she's going on and on about this awfulness that she's struggling with. She turns to the camera, and you can see there's a nail sticking right into her forehead. It's big, like a barn nail. You know? She's like, I don't know what it is. And her husband just can't take his eyes off of this nail. He's like, and he said, finally, he says, darling, I think we can take care of this pretty easily. You know, we'll just, and she says, I don't want you to fix anything. I just want you to listen. You're always trying to fix it. And so, as a wise husband, you know, he just sits quietly and listens as she goes on telling him about the trouble that she's feeling because of this great pain. And finally, at the end, she thanks him. She thanks him for just being there for her and listening. He says, it must be so hard for you, you know, to suffer this way. Doesn't try to fix it at all. He's learned. And she thanks him and she leans over to give him a kiss and then he accidentally bumps into the nail and she's, ah! He goes, you know, I could just, she said, no, don't do that. So And it sort of rings true. I mean, most of all, what we want is for somebody just to witness the fact that we're suffering. You know, we'll figure it out ourselves. Eventually, she'll pull that sucker out of her forehead. But how important for somebody to just be there and witness it, to listen, to notice that this is going on and sympathize, or, you know, just not even have to say anything. And this is the compassion of Avalokiteshvara. I was also reminded, as I was thinking about this talk, of an image I saw shortly after the great earthquake and tsunami in Japan, Fukushima. And it was a picture of a Buddhist monk striding through the wreckage of this village. It was just everything smashed up, and boards and debris everywhere, and he was finding his way through it, holding, I don't know, maybe a pot of incense or a bell. I think maybe it was a bell in one hand. And I got the sense that he was chanting as he went. He had a very concentrated, direct look on his face. And it seemed to me that he was doing this act of witnessing. This thing had happened. It was utterly beyond anything that he could make better or anyone could. Disaster had struck, and there's nothing anyone could do about it. And yet there was this thing that he could do, which was witness it. He walked through, not sheltering himself from the awfulness of it all, walking through and bearing witness. So even, I mean, sometimes there are things that we can do, and then we go ahead and do them, you know, the eyes, the hands. We see what it is that needs to be done, and we lend a hand. Maybe he was on his way to start digging stuff out of the debris, who knows. But there's always so much more that there's nothing we can actively do. And then we bear witness. And this is one of the things that we do as we sit. We practice doing this. And in fact, in the practicing, we also actually do it, bearing witness to everything that arises for ourselves, within ourselves, the things that have happened to us during the day that maybe we put off, just no time to actually consider it or allow ourselves to feel it. But when we sit, we don't hold off anything. We bear witness to all that arises, all of our pain, all of our discomfort, our uncertainty, everything that arises is welcome to come forth, and we bear witness to that. And this is not nothing. This is not a useless endeavor. There's something that actually changes when we don't turn away from difficulty. Don't necessarily have to go toward it either, but simply be in the presence of it, allow it to arise. This allows us to be very useful in this world. One of the ways that it's useful is that, well, I think one of the forms of the arising of suffering, the origin of it, is in our human tendency to split off from ourselves things that we don't like, things that we don't want to recognize as possibly part of ourselves, creating us and them. Oh, I would never be like that, not like that guy. And so we make this gulf, and in there being us and them, it is endless potential for conflict and suffering. So in this simply bearing witness, we don't do that anymore. We don't split it apart. There was a time when I needed some surgery, just minor surgery on my eyelid. And so it was an outpatient procedure. I went down to downtown Boston. Wasn't too far from where I worked. And went to the the ophthalmologist's office. He did the procedure, and it was going to take a few days to before I could take the bandage off. So I had this humongous bandage over half of my face, you know, but definitely over my eye. And it was clear that something had been done with my eye, right? And so as I left the office, I had to walk back to the T station. It was several blocks. And I noticed as I was walking along with this big bandage on my eye that people would glance at me and then quickly look away. They did not want to, I guess they didn't want to be rude and stare, but also there was like this discomfort about it. And as I walked along, I became more and more uncomfortable because I was making everybody around me uncomfortable. Probably I would feel the same way eyes, ooh, you don't want things to happen to them. And so I'm walking along really feeling kind of wretched about the whole thing. Plus my eye hurt, you know? And I really wanted it to heal up okay. And I'm walking along, and I come up to where these people are. These men are sort of lounging around. They look like, if not street people, like homeless people, then certainly people who spend a lot of time just hanging out on the streets. Kind of grungy. And as I'm just coming up to them, the one man jumps up and looks at me and he says, "Oh, hun, are you going to be all right?" And it just made me feel so wonderful. You know, he didn't look away. He looked at me and was concerned. And it wasn't like he had to think about it. It was just what spontaneously arose for him. Somebody who was used to seeing the suffering of the world and not turning away from it. It's a wonderful example for me of Avalokiteshvara, Kanzayom, showing up there on the streets. There's also a lovely story about this from the old Zen literature. This particular story is about Layman Pang. He's one of my all-time favorite characters in these old stories because he's a layman. And most of the stories are about monks and their teachers, Zen masters, and they're, you know, having these sort of sparring contests or something. Not really a contest, but it's a dialogue that's meant to be, to spark something. And so we don't hear about the ordinary citizen, but Layman Pang decided that the monk's way was not his way. He remained a layman, and he was married. He had a wife and a daughter, and they were also the whole family was very much awakened. They were fully immersed in their Zen practice, and anytime a Zen teacher would come by, he'd better have his wits about him because Layman Pang would engage him in this dialogue meant to plumb the depths. And so this particular story happened with between Layman Pang, just amongst his family, and it goes like this. Layman Pang was once selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, he stumbled and fell. When Ling Chao saw this, that's the daughter, she ran to her father's side and threw herself down. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall to the ground, so I'm helping," replied Ling Chao. "Luckily, no one was looking," remarked the layman. So I thought this is a lovely example of someone choosing to the daughter chose to meet her father in the place where he was in the midst of his suffering. I mean, maybe it wasn't very great suffering. He fell. But she was making a point. You know, I'll meet you there. If terrible things happen, I won't turn away. I can meet you right there where they're happening. Layman Pang at the end suggested that we didn't want to call attention to ourselves in doing this. He said, "Luckily, nobody saw you." But of course, all of us saw. This is what comes forth for me when we chant this chant, the Kanhangyo. And it's about each one of us. It's about how we encounter our lives, how we encounter the people and events of our lives, how we can encounter them and aspire to do so in a way that's useful, in a way that is available to each one of us. And more so as we do the sitting, as we practice meeting what arises moment by moment, no matter what it is, bearing witness to the suffering of the world, each one of us can be Avalokiteshvara.